Marilyn Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 16, delivered on October 17th.
Today, bonds. Now, before we do that, just a quick look at the market. And what would you say, sir? Up day, down day?
Pretty.
It's going down.
Going down?
Well, compared to the beginning of the day.
Well, right now, we're still up, but it is nothing to write home about. On two, the Dow is down a little bit, but overall, it is a quiet day on the market. And if you look at the volume on the Standard & Poor's 500, just as a measure, as the gentleman made a mention, we began with a little bit of strength. If you will look, you see we had a little drop at the open, and then the bulls came in pretty hard, and then it bounced, and now the bears are in charge, so we're sagging into the midday, which sort of tells us that, well, that doesn't tell us the end of the day, but it tells us that whatever good news was out there seems to have not lasted very long. And as you can see, extraordinarily low volume. We're about halfway through the day, and we've got 657 million shares trading with an average daily volume of 6.5. So we might see about 1.3, 1.4 million against the average over the last 52 weeks of 3.5 billion. So it's not a great day on the street right now as far as activity goes. And again, that's that irritatingly low, weird low volume, which seems to still indicate that we've got problems coming up in the market sooner or later. Now, going on, I'm going to give you some basics about bonds, and then if you have your calculator or you need to bring out your computer, by all means, because we're going to price bonds, find their yields today. But the first things first. When I refer to bonds, I'm actually referring to any debt instrument. It could be a bill, a note, or a bond. Bond is just a generic term for debt. Just like we could say stock is a generic term for equity. Even though there are different kinds of stock, there is common stock, preferred stock, class A stock, class B stock, restricted stock, whatever. These terms just sort of generically refer to it. Now, first things first, corporate and government debt does not work like normal debt does. Your consumer debt. When you borrow money on a loan, and I'm just going to put one up here. You don't need to worry too much about getting it written down. You've seen this routine over and over. Excuse me. And Apps Finance, and you did fine on this on the exam. Let's say you had a 5-year car loan, monthly payments. Oh, stop it! Stop griping at me. 5-year loan, monthly payments. 5 times 12, and then what in the, is this, why is it fighting with me? No, 5 times 12, there we go, and let's say it's a 4.99 APR, so that'd be 4.99 divided by 12, and you're going to borrow for your car loan $14,000, making sure that everything is on the end here. your payment would be alpha solve. Now, that payment of $264 a month is actually going to cover the interest for the month and shave a little off what you owe. So, in other words, in a consumer loan, we are servicing the debt, paying the interest, and amortizing the loan. In other words, paying off some of the balance. And as you could see, quitting, I could actually say, okay, for that loan, Apps Finance, I could say, well, what's the balance on the loan after, let's say 24 months, 2 years. The balance has dropped to $8,814. We have amortized some of the principal on the loan, shaved it down. That's not how corporate and government debt works. Corporate and government debt, the balance stays at the original value, and all the company or the government does is pay the interest. They service the debt over its life. And then at the end, they make one last interest payment, and then they pay off the whole amount they borrowed in one shot. That makes it so that you wouldn't want that to happen in your case, probably, because it would be sticker shock at the end. Okay, so the whole this all revolves around one quick thing I want to point out. Unless I say otherwise, the principal, the face value, the amount borrowed, they're all the same thing. You'll hear me use different things. The face value, the principal amount, the amount borrowed. That is always going to be $1,000 or an increment of it. But we work with $1,000. That's all you ever do. You assume FV in that calculator is 1,000, the future value, what you will pay at the end as a corporation or a government. Or you would see a quote of 100 that does not have a dollar sign on it because it isn't money. It's just a quote. That's all there is to that. So these are the basic terms of a loan. Now, the thing, though, is that... what am I thinking? There is a weird kind of debt that corporations and the government do. Generally speaking, you would have something like this. Let's say that a company, XDJ, 8%, and they've just issued 30-year bonds, so that would be 2049. That would mean that this company is going to pay 8% of $1,000 every year. So they're going to pay $80 per year. They'll pay that in two pieces. Now, your homework begins with saying they pay it in one shot per year. But realistically, and in the later problems, you're going to do it in two pieces per year. So realistically, if you were to buy this XDJ bond, you would lend the company $1,000. And then for 30 years, you would get a check for $80 a year. And then in 2049, you'd get your last interest payment of $80. And then you would also get a check for the original $1,000 that you borrowed in that last year, 2049. That's how government and corporate debt works. Now, there's a weird little oddball version that corporations do, and the government does it too, on very short-term loans. They don't actually pay you interest. All they do is you lend them less than 1,000, and then you get 1,000 back, anywhere from 30 days to a year later. Those are called discount paper. Okay, here's how it works. Okay, you, sir. Okay, here's how this would work. The Treasury used to do this literally in a live auction or in a live market. They would put what the government wants to borrow money. It needs money for its operations. Now, normally, they'd have Treasury bills, Treasury notes, and Treasury bonds to borrow for different periods of time. The bills are the ones that we're talking about here. A T-bill, a Treasury bill, you're going to buy that from the government. In other words, you're going to lend the government a little bit of money. Now, for God's sake, write this down because I will ask this on the final, probably on a quiz. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Okay? It's actually pretty easy once you get the hang of it. You just got to watch out. There's one little thing in here that you might make a mistake on. Okay, now, let's say that there was actually a Treasury auction that was nothing but Treasury bills. 1 year long Treasury bills. Now they're going to sell at a discount to par. In other words, they're going to sell at less than 1,000, and in 1 year, you're going to get $1,000 back. So you're going to buy them for some $980, $970, something like that. Now, you, sir, have come to the auction, and I am the matron of the auction. My name is Mabel, and I'm going to be hosting you today. Well, hello there, young man. You're here to buy a Treasury bill? Well, we certainly do have some Treasury bills, so they're beautiful. Now, this is your first auction, isn't it? Yes, it is. So why don't you come over here and decide which kind of a Treasury bill that you want to buy? We've got pretty ones all over the place. Now, remember, you hold them for 1 year, and then you get $1,000. Right, in 1 year. So here we go. Here's a nice one for you. Now, what do you want to pay for this?
$975.
Oh, you're an excellent young man. You said that without any prompting whatsoever. Yes, you did. Okay, Earl, $975, 1 year T-bill, lettuce, tomato.
Price?
The price would be $975. Or it would quote at $97.50. Now, the next thing is its future value, its face value, what you get in a year. That will always be the same number. I will never tell it to you. What is that face value, sir? Do you remember what you're going to get in a year?
$1,000.
Well, here we go, $1,000. Now, the next thing that you're going to do is, for this particular kind of problem, how much dollar in dollars, how much interest did you get in dollars, ma'am?
$25.
Excellent. Okay, so now we're ready to finish this up. This is the dollars of interest. Now we can find the yield on this. Now here's the part where you got to watch it. There's a temptation to put $1,000 in the denominator. Don't. This is $25 in interest divided by what you invested, which was $975. Again, the mistake that is made is to put 1,000 in the denominator. No, that's not what you invested. That's what you get at the end. And I guarantee you, in a multiple choice, I will give you the answer that would be if you put 1,000 in there, just to catch you. But now, if I did this on this calculator here, I would take $25 divided by 975, and I would get a 2.56% yield on that debt instrument. Well, that's pretty low interest, but of course, this is a very safe instrument. So, this is the kind of problem I'll ask you. All you have to remember is interest over what you invested. There's your interest, the yield, or the return on your investment, as it were. Now, okay, now that year has come and gone, and you show up at the next one of these T-bill auctions. Well, there you are again, aren't you? Aren't you a dedicated investor now? I see you got your $1,000 in mail, so you're back to do this again. Well, that's wonderful. I'm really proud of you being such a fine young investor. By the way, are you married? I have a daughter. She's going out with a tramp of a guy. Anyway, okay. So what are you going to pay for this T-bill? Now, you stop and you look around and you say, wait, there were a lot of people at the last auction buying these. Demand was strong. But this time, you see hardly anyone there. So are you going to pay $975 for this?
No.
What are you going to pay?
Less than that.
Well, let's be specific here. I'm Mabel. I'll slap the crap out of you if you don't be specific with me. Don't mess around. What do you want?
$950.
Very good. Sometimes you have to teach a trader how to be. $950. Earl, $950. Don't put anything on it. He's a cheapskate. And what's the face value? What's the future value again? What did I say, sir? Automatically. What is? $1,000, yes. $1,000. Okay, so now here we go one more time. This time, your interest is $50. See, you made $50. And then what will happen is $50, and then you're going to find your yield, which in this case is going to be 50 divided by your investment, which was 950. And if you work that out, that's going to be 5.26%. 50 divided by 950 equals, well, I'll be darned, 5.26%. If you can do that, you've got a question right on the exam. Now, there's something important that happened in here, something really important. One of the most basic principles of all finance, and it's not really finance or economics, it's an actual mathematical requirement. Madam, what happened to the price from the first to the second round? No, just say something simple. It went down. The price went down. That's all I want you to say. Don't be accounting on me, okay? Now, tell me what happened to the yield. The price went down. What happened to the yield? Well, I'll be darned. That is an actual law of mathematics. As the denominator falls, the whole fraction will rise. And in finance, what that means is that whenever prices fall, expected yields go up. Price goes down, interest rates go up. That's why you expect higher returns on NASDAQ stocks, because their prices are low. So any jump in the price will cause a high yield return. Whereas you buy very expensive stocks and they go up or down, you don't get any movement in the yield. But prices going down mean yields go up. Now let me show you that one in practice here on this, and of course I close that screen, finance. Now today, if I were to look at the bond market, and this is an index of bonds, in other words, add up a bunch of bonds and see, we see that the price has gone down. Do you see it right there? The price went down. That implies that the yields on these types of bonds, and possibly bonds in general, are going up. That's what it means. So in other words, as we see bonds falling in price, that means their yields are going up, which probably means that the markets are trying to push interest rates up. Right now, you are seeing bond markets with, generally speaking, prices of bonds slipping. That will mean that the bond market is signaling higher interest rates, higher yields, which is contrary to what our White House wants, which is to have interest rates go down. But they can't force the markets to do this. The markets are just saying, we're taking them in the direction we think interest rates are going, which is up. So that's something to keep in mind. Whenever we say bond prices are falling today, that simply means that the markets are anticipating the yield should go up a little. If bond prices rise, well, that's pushed, that means that the yields are probably sliding a little bit. And you'll see that in practice here in a little bit. But anyway, know that. It's a simple problem, and it's actually realistic to the extent that this is what has happened. Now, let me show you a little bit of a twist on this. A little bit more complicated, but not too bad. Companies borrow a lot of money. They borrow money. You just see it happening all the time. They borrow money, they sell stock. In other words, they need infusions of capital, debt capital, equity capital. It's a kind of bill that companies, corporations use. They have to be large, creditworthy corporations. It's where they borrow money for only 30 days for some purpose. It's a vast market. They issue a kind of debt paper. In other words, they sell a kind of debt paper that lasts 30 days, and then at the end of 30 days, $1,000 is paid back, or some multiple of 1,000. This paper, this is called commercial paper. It's issued by large creditworthy corporations. And it is bought, in other words, the lending comes from very short-term investors who just want to make a quick little bit. Okay, Microsoft, you want to borrow $1,000? Okay, we're going to give you, let's say, $998 for 30 days. And then you pay us back $1,000 in that 30 days. The commercial paper market is vast on both sides. There are many corporations that issue the commercial paper, in other words, borrow 30 days, and there are many investors who buy this paper, in other words, lend for the 30 days. As a matter of fact, knowing it or not probably, you are commercial paper investors. There's a kind of an account where businesses do this a lot. They will put money, they have money at the end of the day from their sales and everything. It's in the bank. And then they need that money the next morning to get their operations running again for the next day. But overnight, they don't need that money. So the banks sweep that money. It's called a sweep account, S-W-E-E-P. It sweeps into this giant international vast ocean pool of short-term money available for people, for companies, governments, you name it, who need it just for a little while. And then when the sun rises in wherever you are, it's swept back into your account. So it's like you didn't see it go or come. Now, if you knowingly participate in this, you earn a little tiny bit of interest on your money, which otherwise would just sit there making nothing. Unfortunately, there are just millions and millions of people who don't realize their money is being used for this. They're getting no interest in their checking accounts or whatever, but it's being used by their banks and other institutions. Kind of a twist on this is the gasoline stations, and there's a new player in this market. What they do is if you want to get a fill up with your debit card, you put it in, they lock in quite a bit more than you're going to need to fill up. And then you don't get that money that is over what they locked in. In other words, you get $40 worth of gas, they put a $100 lock, they're not going to release that $60 for a few days. they are going to play in these short overnight markets. That's how they make extra money. Well, you have to prepay anymore. There's one here in town that just started doing required prepay. No pay inside, prepay only. So they're going to lock that money that corporation is. And if you talk about hundreds of thousands of users of the debit service at the gas station for fill-ups every day, that is an enormous amount of money they're making. Yes?
Can you go over the definition of commercial paper?
I'll be a little more specific. Commercial paper is 30-day borrowings by large credit-worthy corporations. Now, I'm going to give you an example of one. It's a, and I'm going to tell you where the downside is. Let's say that Microsoft MSFT, is selling commercial paper at $99.32. That's the quote. Now, that's going to come back in 30 days. So in other words, this is the borrowed. Microsoft borrows this. The investors invest this. And then the investors get back on a quote of 100 in 30 days. Repay. Okay. So you're probably thinking, well, how does this really make a lot of money? If you do this all the time, if you are an investor and you want to make sure that you have high liquidity, but you still want to make a little interest, this is how you would do it. You're not going to make much, but let's look at what's going to happen as far as the yield goes. The yield on this is going to the yield. Now, this is an annualized yield. Now, this is where something from the first half of the course comes in. The annualized yield is going to be $1,000 divided by $993.20 raised to the 1 over 30 days out of 365. Minus 1. Let that absorb for a minute. You remember that thing, 1 over the number of years? Well, the number of years here would be 30 over 365. So in other words, to annualize this thing, you'd do 1 over 30 divided by 365. And over beginning, minus 1. That would get you the annualized yield on this paper. Yeah. Because these are quotes. These are just quotes. The actual amount that you lend is 10 times that. You're going to lend $993.20. You are going to get back $1,000 in 30 days. So the end, 1,000, divided by the beginning, $993.20. In other words, you're going to invest $993.20. In 30 days, you're going to get $1,000. And that is going to be, remembering that formula for 1 over the number of years, well, the number of years here, 1 over the number of years. Well, the number of years here is 30 days divided by 365. So in other words, this is about 0.08 of a year, something like that. Now I'm going to push this in here. Follow with me. On. Clear? Okay, so I'm going to take the, I'm going to get back $1,000 on a $993 and, whoops, $993 and, what was that, 20 cents? Is that right? 20 cents? And then I'm going to close that parenthesis, and then I'm going to raise that to the 1 divided by, and remember that parenthesis, you've got to trap that denominator, 30 divided by 365. close the parenthesis again, because you had the opening of the parenthesis for that exponent, and now you've got this, so you have to do 2 there, minus 1. So your yield is going to be 8.66% on this paper, annualized. That's a pretty high yield on that, but that's your annualized yield on this paper. Now again, this is a particular kind of investor, lender. An investor that doesn't want to commit money for a long period of time, but 30 days isn't bad. So you're going to put 30 days, you're going to lend Microsoft $993.20 in 30 days, about a month. Microsoft will give you back $1,000. So that means that you're committing, as the investor in Microsoft, you're committing funds for only 30 days. So you're maintaining decent liquidity doing this, but you're still making a little money. It's better than if I'm an investor, I can keep money in a checking account. It's not going to make me any money at all. Or I could participate in these commercial paper markets and get at least something for short-term investments of my money. Now, remember what I said. Commercial paper is really safe. It's large, credit-worthy corporations are the ones who borrow on paper, on commercial paper. Unfortunately, that's not what happened in one spectacular incident. You see, because, I mean, if you invest in commercial paper, it's just like, oh yeah, I'll lend this company money for 30 days. This is a great corporation. No stupid corporation does, or lousy corporation does, commercial paper. And you can even look at there's screens where you can see who's issuing commercial paper. You can see, yeah, Microsoft, Apple, Netflix, Tesla. You can see big companies are doing, oh yeah, this is okay. Well, unfortunately, there was once when this one company, supposedly highly reputable, profitable, it had issued commercial paper for years, just like other companies did. And then it issued a whole pile of commercial paper in the millions and millions of dollars. No one thought anything about it. Oh, yeah, it's just commercial paper. Yeah, take some of that. It was Enron. A few weeks before it collapsed, these con artists, the criminals who were running Enron in the top management, they knew it was almost over. What they were doing was any money they could get their hands on, they were moving to offshore accounts in their names, their own accounts. And it suddenly occurred to them, why don't we issue commercial paper? And when that comes in, no one's going to ask anything. We'll just take those funds and shuttle them offshore to our personal, private, hidden accounts. And sure enough, that's what they did. And then they announced, just a week or two later, oh, the company is bankrupt. My bad. Default on everything. There's no value in the company at all. End of story. See, because commercial paper is not collateralized. It's just basically, it's about as risky as a debt could get, even though no one saw it that way. And then suddenly, all of these markets and all of these investors who had been forever investing in commercial paper, assuming that it was perfectly safe, found out it isn't. It isn't perfectly safe. Enron gave them a wake-up call. And so for a long time after that, interestingly enough, all companies that issued commercial paper, all the fine companies that issued it, suddenly started finding that investors weren't going to pay $99.32 or whatever. They were going to lend $96.50 or $94.80 because it was riskier. And what happens when price falls? What happens to yield? Do you remember real quick? Well, spank me Jesus. The markets work. The risk of these commercial paper shot through the roof. And so, I mean, you know, the Enron boys, they had done, this wasn't the only thing they did. I mean, they sold a $2 billion pipeline a few weeks before the company went tap city. That's, I mean, then they moved as much of that as they could offshore. It was just like the biggest con game in a long time. Now, there have been other ones since then that were more spectacular in their own way, orders of magnitude more. The con games that were played with derivatives in 2000s up to the run-up to the disaster in 2008 in September, those cats, we're talking what they left in their wake that will never, ever be paid off, but it's still on the books of all of these investors, trust funds, governments, insurance companies, corporations that invested in these. They're dead, but they're still on the books as if they're still alive. Just a staggering. How much are we talking in that case? Enron was a couple of billion. That's peanuts compared to what the derivatives market went through this, what they went through, which is about $64 trillion in dead debt securities, in dead derivatives. $64 trillion. Now, if that's not bad enough, those corpses are on all of these balance sheets of corporations, trust funds, governments, you name it. This time, if we teeter over the edge like we did in 2008, the notional value of what's out there that will go completely zombie is on the order of, my guess is about $2.4 quadrillion. So you pray to God we don't have a crash, because that would be the end of it. We'll try to cover it. We'll tell you everything's okay and all that. But, you know, that's your problem, not mine. I've got myself a nice bunker out in the woods. Okay, so now, moving on from that disaster, moving on from that fiasco. Now, this world is what is called discount debt. In other words, it's just sold at a discount to par, then you wait and you get all your money back. So, sir, would you lend me $1,000 and I'll hook you back up with it in 7 years? Really? Oh, okay, how about I give it back to you in 10 years? Oh, fine, 15 years, I'll give you your money back. Okay, there is actually a kind of debt out there that you don't get a coupon. You don't get your interest payments. All you do is lend them money, and then years later, you get your $1,000 back. These are, they come under several different names. Sometimes they're called deep discount bonds because you're not going to lend a lot if all you wait, you have to wait clear to the end. Deep discount bonds, another name for them is zero coupon bonds, ZCBs. Now, these are wickedly risky because you lend the company money, they don't do anything for you for 7 years, 10 years. In the 1990s, the media vilified these traders who did this, and it was somewhat unjust, and federal prosecutors and state prosecutors just pranced around because they made this look like they were catching the evil of the universe. There were these engineers, financial engineers, on the West Coast. And this was when there were all of these small companies working to build this new thing called the internet. Now, the internet really didn't have a whole lot going on, other than in the 1990s, you could go to websites that, you could look at lolcats, those started showing up. You could probably do chat. There were a couple of social media services back then, and there were really kind of lame-looking, tired websites around. But these companies were aiming at a vision of the internet where commercial activity could be carried out. They were essentially, they had a sort of a generic name. These companies were called the dot-coms. And if you were one of the people involved in a dot-com, you were probably some kind of a geek that wrote web page designs. You were trying new things so that money could go from someone who wanted to buy something to the company, and the company would be able to send you whatever it was you were trying to buy. This was very dramatic and bold. Interestingly enough, some of the first pioneers in this were in industries that I'm not even allowed to mention in classes these days because they were off-limits subjects. But they figured out how credit cards could be used to buy, access, and download pictures. Naughty pictures. Nothing evil or illegal, but it was... And these guys made a fortune. And the other dot-coms were working in other... and that was a very hot thing. But there was also retail stuff. And these dot-coms, they were small. They were little like 10-person, 5-person operations. But they needed money because they needed computers. They needed the fastest internet that was available. And believe me, at that time, it was slow internet. We had dial-up modems and things like that. ISDNs were about as fast as you could get. Okay, anyway. The problem was that these companies were long-haul. They weren't going to make a dime for years because it was going to take the world quite a while to realize, oh, there's something called the internet. We can make money here. So there was not going to be any cash flow that was going to be worth anything for a long time. So these financial engineers said, we got a way we can do this. We'll have you issue ZCBs, zero coupon bonds. In other words, we'll borrow money from investors, and then we will not pay them anything for 7 years, and then we'll give them their $1,000. That was how the whole game was going to work. So, let me show you. This is a little bit simplistic, but it was really pretty close to how it was done. A dot-com would issue a ZCB. In other words, in 7 years, the investor would get a check for $1,000 in the mail, but there would be no coupons along the way, no interest payments. So what would happen is this would have to be deeply discounted back to here. In other words, you're talking about an investor who would put in maybe, we'll lend you $400, and 7 years from now, you're going to pay us back $1,000. That's a classic. Do you see the deep discount? See that? To a certain extent, this is just ridiculous. You'll watch what happens when I calculate the yield on this thing. Well, as a matter of fact, let me do that right now. The yield on it would be the end, 1,000, over the beginning, which would be 400, to the 1 over the number of years, which would be 7. Minus 1, sorry. Okay. Now, really? Okay, so I'm going to do this now. I'm going to take open parenthesis 1,000 divided by 400. Close the parenthesis and then raise that to the 1 over the number of years. Close the parenthesis. Notice it's nice not having to do days or anything like that in this. Minus the 1. 13.99%. In other words, these were very high yield bonds. They were junk bonds. No getting around it. This was junk. High yield bonds. They were junk bonds. But there was a vast number of investors who were willing to play. This would have worked. This would have worked, except for two forces, one in the private sector and one in the public sector. The private sector, where the whole thing fell apart with the dot-coms, was that this was the era when the rise of the oligopolists, the Microsoft, the Apple, were grabbing control of markets, and they were destroying any small company that posed a threat. Microsoft destroyed Netscape. Microsoft destroyed, WordPerfect. Microsoft just, and what they were doing was illegal. It was patently illegal. Bill Gates and his inner circle just bet on the fact that if they were ever prosecuted, they would be so powerful that it wouldn't work, and they were right. There was they signed a consent decree with the United States government in 2000, saying, yes, we did all these things. Okay, we're going to do this, this, and this to make up for it. They never did anything in the consent decree. They never did a damn thing. They were supposed to split the company in two. They didn't do that. They were supposed to do all this stuff. So essentially, that bet was right. They just wrecked companies in their path illegally in many cases. Okay, now the other part was our federal government. It was the Federal Reserve. During the 1990s, the economy was doing so incredibly well. The stock markets were doing phenomenally. The dot-coms were booming, and everything else was. And so the government's tax revenues were really great. I mean, we were actually paying off our federal budget deficits. We were no longer borrowing extra money. We were actually beginning to run surpluses, which means we could pay off the old debt from half a century. It was awesome what was happening. The economy was just booming. Well, the Federal Reserve, run by Alan Greenspan at the time, got really pissed off. You see, because if the government is no longer borrowing money, it's no longer selling T-bills. But the Federal Reserve buys those T-bills so that it can execute open market operations to control the economy. So in other words, once we got to the point where we were running budget surpluses, the government was no longer borrowing money, no longer issuing treasury debt, the Federal Reserve was out of business as far as open market operations were concerned. No, there weren't any T-bills for the Fed to buy so that they could trade them with banks to move the money supply. Greenspan started claiming that this was all I think he was one of the first to use the stupid-ass term, bubble. He called it irrational exuberance of the markets and all that. And so he went on a tear, raising the discount rate, a record 8 times in a row at FOMC meetings. It just kept going up and up and up. The problem was that the economy just wouldn't quit. Finally, after about 8 of these raises in the interest rates, the most interest rate sensitive of securities started to buckle. Deep discount bonds are highly, it's basically the entire thing is out there. So any interest rate changes caused the prices to whipsaw violently. So when he jacked up the interest rates, this caused that value to go through the floor. And the dot-coms couldn't borrow any more money to keep their cash flow positive, and so they collapsed. And so the ones that were out here already issued went into default because the dot-coms went into default. And that was the collapse of the dot-coms. There was no stupid, idiotic term, there was a dot-com bubble. No, it was done deliberately by the Fed. I'm not saying that they deliberately destroyed the dot-coms, but what they did, their actions to try to stop the economy from growing so fast, was indeed what caused the dot-com collapse. And so the prosecutors preened themselves. They sent all of the zero-coupon bond designers to prison. They made it sound like they were the evilest things in the universe. They weren't. They were just creating an instrument that could be used by companies that couldn't pay interest payments for a number of years until they got on their feet. Risky? Hell yes, those things were risky, and everyone who bought them knew they were risky. No one who bought, well, I shouldn't say that. There were some broker-dealers who were talking idiots into investing in zero-coupon bonds. I do know that was happening. I was there and I saw it. But the designers and the dot-coms themselves, they were not evil. They were just simply doing what might have worked if we hadn't had some rather malevolent forces against them. Now, let me get off this tear. And I'm going to continue this subject, by the way, on Tuesday. So I'm going to back your homework up 5 days for this chapter. That'll help out. But let me show you something here. I'm going to get out of talking about, I'll do the math on Tuesday, but I have to get you through a few of the types of bonds. Now, first of all, a bond has a coupon. And it has a yield. The coupon is what the company pays in interest. Now, there's another percent here that's called the yield. This is what the market currently thinks the bond should pay. You got to watch this because you're going to see percents. And if you're doing it on the TI-83, or actually on any calculator, the one that goes in the I percent is this one. This is the one that's the I percent key, the yield. If you're not told the yield, then that's the one you're going to put the cursor on and say alpha solve. This one right here, that is the PMT. This has to be a dollar amount. So if I say 8%, then PMT is 8% times the face value, $1,000. So this is $80 a year. If you're realistic, you would make that 80 divided by 2 and just double the number of periods. Always know the PMT will be the coupon in a dollar amount. This is what I've found over 40 years is literally the one that trips you up. Well, which goes where? If it says yield, the yield is 5.29%, then you put 5.29 in there. If it's semi-annual, you'd put 5.29 divided by 2. If it says the coupon is 6%, then you put $60 in there, or 60 divided by 2 if the payments are semi-annual. Keep that in your notes, because if you can get through that, then these problems are really a joke. There's nothing complicated about it. If you want to see it get complicated, sign up for my next course, Investments 242. Then it gets to be a little weird. But for basic investing purposes, this is all there is to it. Now, first things first, just a couple of lists. Corporate. Companies borrowing money. That's corporate debt. Government. That is U.S. or some other country borrowing money. We call, in the United States, we would generally say it's a treasury, because that's our U.S. Department of Treasury borrowing money to pay the bills because we can't afford everything we spend money on. So that would be, in the United States, it would be called treasury. But many countries, many sovereign things, yeah. Did someone have a question? Okay, many countries, I mean, like I said, in Panama, they just issued several billion dollars. Ghana issued some that I know of. I mean, it just goes on, European Union, et cetera. Now, a couple of other terms. There are odd things, like municipals, which are called munis. A municipal bond is something like a state, a city, a school district issuing paper. In other words, borrowing money. Like, so, for example, you, sir, burned down your high school. So we're going to have to build a new high school. Okay? So we'll issue a bond that we'll be invested in. Now, these are sometimes called revenue bonds, because what will happen is a school district will say, okay, we need to borrow $15 million for 30 years. Now, what we'll do is, for those who are going to lend us the money, we're going to create a tax that is specifically designed to pay for this bond over that 30 years. That would be a revenue bond. The same will happen with sewer systems and water systems for cities. They will issue these kinds of munis. The key with a muni is that if you lend, you buy a muni, in other words, if you lend some sovereign authority money, you don't have to pay interest on your, pay taxes on your interest at the federal level. You don't have to pay any taxes on it. That's why their interest rates tend to be lower, is because you're not taxed. The thing, though, is that you should never buy these unless you are a very wealthy investor, because that interest rate lowering is based upon very rich people's tax brackets, like 35%, 40%. So you wouldn't want to invest in these if you're not super rich, or a very big corporation, or a very big bank. There's a version of this, by the way, called agency debt. Agency debt is, there are all these agencies in the United States government that borrow money on their own tab. They don't go through the treasury. There are water resources, electric grids. Like, for example, one you may have heard of is the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA. They issue their own agency bonds for their operations, for their capital investments. Now, there are other ones, too, in here. One would be called an investment grade. These are bonds that are good to invest in. They're safer. They're not perfectly safe. Nothing is perfectly safe. But they're investment grade. And then the other side of that are what are called high yield bonds. That is a politically correct term for junk. So don't ever say junk bond. That is just not what you say, okay? So, referring to me, I mean, you would call me a generously fat person. instead of a fat boy, okay, or something like that. We just say junk bonds only in, you know, when there's no one around and we know we can say things like that. But otherwise, you just say they are high yield because their coupons are very high to get investors, to get lenders. I'll go through a few more on Tuesday. That's all I have for you. Thank you.